The Parenting Paradox. The Parenting Paradox.
Parenting has never been more complicated than it is right now, with technology creating challenges our own parents never had to face and no roadmap for how to handle them. This is the Parenting Paradox, where we tackle the real struggles of raising kids who are growing up with smartphones, social media, and screens everywhere they look. Today's episode will give you practical tools to navigate this digital minefield while still raising confident, connected children. Welcome to the Parenting Paradox.
It's so good to be back in the studio, and today's topic, this one hits close to home for me, really close.
For me too. I was tucking my daughter in the other night, and she asked for one more story. Of course, I said yes, but instead of pulling a book off her shelf, she reached for her tablet, and I had this moment, this real internal conflict. On one hand, she's excited about a story, which is what I live for, but on the other, it's that screen again. Always the screen.
That is the exact paradox, isn't it? The story is there, the engagement is there, but the medium feels different. I see it with my son. He'll listen to an audiobook for hours, completely captivated, but getting him to pick up the physical copy of that same book feels like a monumental task.
Precisely. It raises this huge question that I think every parent is wrestling with right now. In a world overflowing with digital content, have we lost the art of turning a physical page? And more importantly, how do we get it back?
It's a digital dilemma.
And you know, that old school magic we're trying to reignite? It's fascinating because it isn't actually magic. We think of it that way, but there's a profound science to what's happening in a child's brain when they look at a page.
A science? Really? I always just saw it as this natural, cozy thing you do. I never thought of it as a biological process.
Well, that's the thing that blows most people's minds. Human speech is ancient. Our brains evolved over millennia to do it. But writing? That's only about 5,000 years old.
So, what you're saying is, our brains aren't naturally wired to read?
Not at all. A child's brain has to literally build a new neural circuit for reading. It has to connect the visual part of the brain, which sees the letters, to the language part, which processes the sounds. Every child who learns to read is performing a minor miracle of neuroscience.
Wow. Okay, that changes things. When I see my son struggling with a word, my first instinct is frustration. But you're telling me his brain is in the middle of a massive construction project.
That's a perfect way to put it. And it happens in stages. Think of that emerging pre-reader phase, from when they're babies up to about age 6. We read to them, they memorize the stories, they love the pictures.
Right. My daughter does that. She'll read me an entire book she's memorized without looking at a single word.
And we love that. But researchers found something critical. The traditional way of just reading a story to a child, it actually makes very little difference in their later ability to read on their own.
Wait, what? Seriously? I thought read-alouds were the gold standard.
They are, but with a tiny, crucial adjustment. A study found that when teachers simply directed the kids' attention to the letters and words on the page, even just pointing to them as they read, it made a significant difference in their future reading, spelling, and even comprehension.
Oh my gosh. So all this time I've been focused on the story, the performance, and I should have just been tracing the words with my finger?
It's that simple. It connects the sound they're hearing to the shape they're seeing. It's the very first step in building that new circuit. And then they move into that next phase, the novice reader, around 6 or 7 years old.
Ah, the sounding it out phase, the painful phase.
It is. It's painful to listen to because it's so slow. But that's when they're actively using the circuit. They're decoding. They're realizing that these squiggles, C-A-T, connect to the sounds they've known their whole life.
But it feels like they're not even understanding the story at that point. They're just making sounds.
Often, they aren't. The research is clear on this. At the beginning of that decoding stage, a child is using so much mental energy just to figure out the words that they have almost no capacity left for comprehension.
So, I shouldn't be quizzing him on the plot when he's struggling just to get through a sentence?
Exactly. The goal at that moment isn't comprehension. It's just getting through the mechanics. It's about making that decoding process smoother, more confident, until it starts to become automatic. That's the bridge to real, fluent reading.
It's like you have to build the road before you can enjoy the drive. And I've been getting annoyed that there are potholes in a road that's still being paved.
That is such a powerful metaphor, and it gets right to the heart of the next big question, doesn't it? If we're the construction foreman for our kids' reading brains, what's the best way to pave that road? Because, well, for decades, there's been a huge debate about the right materials to use. A real reading war.
A reading war? That sounds intense. I just thought there was, you know, one way to teach reading.
Oh, if only it were that simple. On one side, you have this massive body of research, what people are now calling the science of reading, which points overwhelmingly to an approach called systematic phonics.
Okay, I've heard that term, systematic phonics. It sounds very structured, very rigid.
It is, and that's its strength. It's the idea that you explicitly teach the relationships between letters and sounds in a logical, structured sequence. You give the child the actual tools to build the words from the ground up.
Right. But then, what's the other side of this war?
The other side is an approach that has dominated schools for decades, often packaged under the name balanced literacy.
Okay. See, that's the term I know. That's what my son's school uses. Balanced literacy. It sounds so, well, balanced.
It sounds wonderful, doesn't it? But the problem is what often lies at the core of that balance. It's a technique some researchers call the three cueing system.
The what system?
The three cueing system. It essentially teaches children that when they get to a word they don't know, they should use three cues to figure it out. First, look at the picture. Second, think about the structure of the sentence. And third, maybe look at the first letter of the word.
Oh my gosh, that is exactly what his teacher tells him to do. Look at the picture, sweetie. What do you think that word could be? Does that make sense in the sentence? I do it with him too, because that's what I was told to do.
And it comes from a good place. The intention is to keep the focus on meaning and prevent frustration. But what it's actually teaching the child's brain is a terrible habit. It's teaching them to guess. It's telling them to look away from the word to figure out what the word is.
Wait, look away from the word. Wow. When you put it like that, you're right. It's a strategy for avoiding the hard work of actually reading.
It completely bypasses that road-building process we were just talking about. Instead of strengthening the neural circuit for decoding, it builds a different, much less efficient pathway for guessing. And it works, for a while. It works with simple picture books. But when a child hits third or fourth grade, and the pictures disappear and the sentences get complex, that guessing strategy completely falls apart.
And that's when the real struggle begins. So what does the alternative, the systematic phonics approach, tell a kid to do in that moment? When they hit a word they don't know.
It tells them to do the opposite. It tells them to look harder at the word, to use the tools they've been taught, to sound it out, letter by letter, sound by sound, and then blend those sounds together to build the word. It's a method called synthetic phonics, and it's about construction, not guesswork.
Synthetic phonics, like synthesizing the sounds, that makes so much sense. It's empowering them with a code they can apply to any word, not just the ones with a convenient picture next to them.
Precisely. You're giving them a key that unlocks the entire language, instead of just helping them peek through one specific keyhole.
I feel like I've been handing my son a bunch of flimsy lockpicks, when what he really needed was the master key all along. It's a little infuriating.
And that infuriating feeling, it is so, so valid. I think every parent who stumbles across this research goes through that same moment. It feels like a betrayal almost. But the important thing to remember is, it's not your fault. You were given a faulty map, and you followed it with the best intentions.
A faulty map. Yeah, that's what it feels like. So, what do I do now? Do I march into the school and demand they change their entire curriculum? because I feel like I want to, but I also know that's not going to happen.
Right. And that's a battle that's being fought at a much higher level. For you, at home, the change can be immediate and powerful. You just become the master key holder. When he gets stuck on a word, you gently cover the picture with your hand and say, "Let's look at the letters."
Just that? Cover the picture?
It's a simple act, but it completely redirects his brain's attention. It tells him the answer is in the word, not somewhere else on the page. You're reinforcing the right pathway. Praise the effort of him sounding it out, even if it's slow and clunky. You're not praising the guess, you're praising the work.
Praise the work, not the guess. Okay? Okay. I can do that. That feels manageable. It feels like I can start doing that tonight, without having to overhaul everything.
And that's how it starts. You're just adding the most important tool back into his toolbox, and it brings us all the way back to the beginning, to that tablet and that physical book. Because if reading is a constant, frustrating guessing game, of course, a screen is more appealing.
Oh, wow. I never made that connection. The reason he prefers the screen isn't just because it's shiny and new. It's because reading is genuinely hard for him. And we've accidentally been teaching him strategies that keep it hard.
When you make them a confident, capable decoder, when you give them that master key, suddenly, the book isn't a locked chest of frustrating secrets anymore. It's an adventure they have the power to unlock all by themselves. That's how you make the page compete with the pixel.
It's like the ultimate paradox we've been talking about. To get them to love the magic of stories in books, you first have to demystify the mechanics of the words themselves. You have to show them the science before they can appreciate the art.
That is a beautiful way to put it. You give them the code, and then they can get lost in the story. It stops being about the labor of reading and starts being about the joy of it.
You know, it's funny. I came into this conversation thinking the enemy was the screen, but I'm leaving it thinking the real enemy was just a bad strategy. And that's something I can actually fix. This has been, honestly, this has changed everything for me. So thank you.
It's why we do this, for those moments. So thank you for sharing that journey with us. It's a conversation that I think is going to echo in a lot of homes tonight.
I really hope so. It feels like we've been handed back the map, the right map, this time.
Remember, you don't have to have all the answers. You just need to stay engaged, keep the conversation going, and trust that your love and guidance matter more than any algorithm. This has been The Parenting Paradox, where every episode reminds you that perfect parenting doesn't exist, but intentional parenting in the digital age absolutely can. Keep showing up for your kids, even when the technology feels overwhelming.